UK Wine Show, Show 2, brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. G'day, and welcome to the UK Wine Show. This week we're going to be talking to winemaker Dermot Sugrue from Nye Timber. Dermot's an effervescent Irishman who's the man behind the wines at Nye Timber. We're going to be talking to him about Nye Timber, about their new owner, Eric, and also what the future holds for Nye Timber and also the UK wine scene. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Well, Chris, here's some news that will keep you happy. Sales of Kiwi wine are growing by leaps and bounds in the UK. According to recent figures released by market analyst Nielsen, we've been buying 23% more New Zealand wine in the past year, and that's the biggest increase for any country in the world. We bought only 5% more bottles of Australian wine, while French, German and South African wine sales actually went down. California's doing well, their sales are up 13%, so not too bad. And don't forget that Australia and Californian wines account for about 80% of all wine that's sold on promotion. So with all the activity that you see on the shelves, the Americans seem to be doing a bit better than the Australians. But great news for New Zealand anyway. Another interesting piece of news is the situation in Georgia. A couple of weeks ago, Russia banned the import of wine from Georgia, and they account for 90% of Georgian exports. So Georgia's looking for new markets to export to. The Prime Minister was over in the UK at a London tasting last week, promoting Georgian wines. So hopefully they'll do well from that. But there's one small problem. The grape varieties are all native to Georgia and all new to the UK consumers, and have names like Razzatelli and Naparuli. I had trouble pronouncing them. Don't know about you, Chris, but I think the British consumer might struggle.
I think the names are a bit difficult, but I think the UK consumer is pretty adaptable. They took to the screw cap pretty quick, Jane, and I think strange grape names, I think they'll deal with it pretty well, as long as they're not in those terrible Gothic German script that you see sometimes in the supermarkets. That New Zealand 23% increase, great. I like to support New Zealand wines, and they're pretty good as well. But I think a lot of that is actually more supply-led rather than demand-led. New Zealand had a big kick-up in supply between 03 and 04, where they over-doubled the amount of wine they produced. And I think that flowed into the UK about 2005, the end of 04. And that's probably what's driving a lot of it. So it's more about more wine available for sale than the consumer demanding more. But that ends the news, and coming up next we've got the interview with Dermot. It was recorded outside, so if you hear the birds in the background, just think of a nice sunny day in England in spring. Here I am with Dermot Sugrue. He's the winemaker at Nye Timber. Nye Timber started with a string of awards. What do you think things have gone so well for you guys?
I think really it was a commitment to quality right from the very, very start. That started really in the location of the vineyards and sourcing of the vineyards in the late 1980s. It was an American couple, Stuart and Sandy Moss from Chicago, who had this vision of creating a world-class sparkling wine in England. Very ambitious plan it was at the time. And they concentrated on producing as high a quality wine as they could right from the start, vineyard, top quality clones, top quality vineyard site, and then making the wine in the best way possible.
Nye Timber's one of the specialists in sparkling wine, isn't it?
It is indeed. Well, we're certainly responsible for pioneering English sparkling wine as a world-class product. We've really kick-started the English wine industry in the last 15 years or so.
Have you thought about doing any other styles of wine here?
I don't think so. It's one of the advantages, or one of the reasons why we've been so successful is because we concentrated on one style of wine just by making a sparkling wine rather than being distracted with trying to make too many different styles.
And what about the soils? Do you think that has helped you in the climate for making the good sparkling wine that you guys are producing?
Yeah, I think it's been critical, absolutely critical. When the moss is planted, initially they're looking for the soil that we've got here, which is green sand. There's only a very small amount of green sand amongst all the chalk here around the south of England. And green sand has got some particular qualities the most important really being its free draining nature. It also provides the correct nutrient base for the vine, so that has been very, very successful. That and the fact that we're on lovely south-facing slopes here, so we get very good exposure to sunlight, and it protects against frost as well.
Okay. You've had about three owners now, is it three?
Yeah, that's right. Most recently, only in March of this year, we had our latest owner. The Mosses were the first, the American couple, who gave it 15 years. That was their initial plan. And then it was sold in 2001 to Andy Hill, the songwriter. Andy has done terrific work in the past 5 years. A lot of investment and a lot of concentrating on getting Nye Timber, which up until about 3 years ago, Nye Timber was really just a good story that all the wine press knew about. It was a great, it was no secret in the trade. However, not many of the public knew about Nye Timber at all and the kind of success, the international success that we'd experienced. So Andy set about promoting Nye Timber, and, you know, our brand has grown a great deal. We've got a lot more exposure in high-profile restaurants, and our distribution is a lot better as a result.
Okay. And Eric is the new owner. What do you think his future plans are for Nye Timber?
Well, they're great. From my perspective, and everybody who's been involved at Nye Timber over the years, it's fantastic. Because we're getting, here's a guy, Eric, who is very, very ambitious. He's got a lot of resource behind him, which is a great thing. And he's got great plans for how we can expand. But most importantly, what he's very, very keen on is to maintain the quality and indeed improve the quality that we've already achieved. So that's fantastic.
You guys have been planting quite a lot recently. What will that do to your production, and when will that come on stream?
It's going to significantly boost our production over the next number of years. The vines are going into the ground this May, over the next few weeks. So we're going to, around about 2008 or so, we're going to have a big, big increase in production. And then by about 2011, 2012, all that vineyard will come on to full production. So it'll be a big increase.
And be, what, 5-6 years before those wine actually becomes available? You guys keep it...
Pretty much, yeah. We've always had a tradition here at Nye Timber of keeping the wine for at least 5 years on lees. Some wines we've left longer, because if the wine requires it, we give it that extra lees aging. But it remains to be seen with the new vineyards what kind of fruit that will produce.
Just for the people at home, the wine, sparkling wine, sits on the dead yeast from the second fermentation when you get the sparkle into the wine, isn't it? And that's the lees that the wine sits on. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. After we're a traditional method producer here, just like in Champagne and all the best sparkling wines. So we do a second fermentation inside the bottle, which then creates a deposit of the lees. And it's the interaction with the wine, of the wine and the lees over a long period of aging, that gives it your typical Champagne or sparkling wine characters, that bready, biscuit flavour that develops.
Excellent. I'm a Kiwi. I quite like Sauvignon Blanc. Over here, I think the closest thing that the English tend to grow is Bacchus. Apart from, what's your favourite wine that they're growing in England, apart from the sparkling Nye Timber?
I think I'm a big fan of Bacchus. I always have been a big fan of Bacchus. I worked a number of years ago with an English winemaker, a very experienced guy called Rob Hemphill, and he was instrumental in bringing Bacchus to the UK from Germany about 20 years ago. And I think Bacchus has got tremendous potential. It's already been achieved. In some of the good years, you get this fantastic, can be herbaceous wine, a lot of passion fruit, kiwi flavours, which are similar to what you get in Sauvignon Blanc.
And
I think it's exactly, it stands up really, really well.
Just about you now, Dermot. Irishman making wine in England, you know, doesn't sound right to me.
It's a little bit odd, yeah. It's a little bit off the beaten track, I suppose. Ireland isn't exactly a hotbed of viticulture, so I didn't really grow up where the option of a career as a winemaker was very prevalent.
How did you get into the wine industry?
I developed a passion for when I was quite young. I started making beer when I was about 15 years of age, and I was absolutely fascinated with the whole process of doing that. And then about a year later, a local archdeacon gave me a bottle of his homemade elderberry wine, and I was absolutely blown away this guy had made it himself. And, yeah. And again, that just took off the fascination with that. So throughout my adolescence, I spent all of my time making wine out of every fruit and vegetable that I could get my hands on. And of course, importing grape juice, concentrated grape juice. So that's really where the whole fascination started.
Yeah. How long have you been actually making wine? As a professional winemaker now?
Really, I suppose it's since the 2003 vintage, so it's very, very recent. I mean, prior to that, I'd done spells in Bordeaux, doing vintages in Pomerol, and then did a vintage in Château Léo-Vilbarton in Saint-Julien. And then I got a job in a contract winery in Suffolk, where I was making a lot of different wines. And then I went through a period of training at Plumpton College before then coming here to Knighttimber, initially working as the assistant winemaker. And then I took over in early 2004.
What do you think the hardest challenge has been in the wine trade or as a winemaker?
Speaking personally, I think really was taking on the responsibility of Knighttimber at quite an early age, a young age rather, and not with a massive amount of experience. It was a huge challenge. But I was very, very confident in my ability, I suppose, because from a young age I felt I'd built up quite an intuitive understanding of the whole winemaking process. That and a massive, massive passion to forge a career as a winemaker. It was a big challenge.
Where do you think the future lies with you now?
Definitely at Knighttimber. I never really thought that I'd end up or spend a long part of my career making wine in England, because I've always had a passion for French wines, particularly Bordeaux. Okay. That was what I aspired to many years ago. But the potential to make, well, not just the potential, but the chance of making really high quality wine in England is now well known. So the potential going forward to continue this and to develop it is an extraordinary opportunity.
Something I always ask people: what would describe you if you were a wine? What would be your best description of a wine? Best describe you.
If it was to reflect my personality?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's a question really, but I suppose really it has to come down to what I like in a sparkling wine, and I'm a big fan of Blanc de Blanc, and I think...
That's just straight Chardonnay, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes, 100% Chardonnay. The Chardonnay on its own, there's something amazingly graceful about it as it ages. At the early part of its life, it's when it's quite immature. It's a little bit neutral and a bit difficult to understand what's going on there. But over time, it suddenly develops and opens up into a great wine. It's got fantastic longevity.
Where do you think you are in that aging process?
I think I'm just about hitting the third or fourth year of autolysis of Nice aging. So I'm just starting to open up and flower.
excellent. Just talking about English wine, what do you think obviously Knighttimber, you guys are specialists in sparkling wines. What do you think the future is? It's obviously sparkling wines.
I think completely. The future really for the whole of the English wine industry is going to be spearheaded by premium sparkling wine production. We've established that it's possible, and we know that there's a hell of a lot of investment going on at the moment towards increasing the sparkling wine industry. You've got a lot of major players. Knighttimber now, with the help of Mr. Hiram has come on board, we're going to be a very, very major player. You've got a number of other high quality companies such as Chapeldown, Ridgeview, etc., and they're investing a lot as well at the moment. So the future of English sparkling, of the English wine industry and sparkling wine in particular is looking absolutely great.
Excellent. What about other styles of wine apart from sparkling? Anything else you think?
I think there's possibly potential to produce a decent red wine from Pinot Noir, in the years ahead. Yeah, I mean, everybody talks about global warming and what may or may not happen, but there's no doubt over the last 15 years we can see that the summers are getting warmer. We're getting a longer growing season. We're getting less things like frost. So varieties like Pinot Noir, maybe to make rosé and to make a light red wine, there really is great potential there. And who knows, in 50 years time, with the right vineyards planted in the right places, once those vineyards develop, we could produce some really, really interesting still wines too.
What about the future commercialization of the English wine industry? You're saying that it's been at the point where you've proven that you can make great wines. How do you think it'll flow through in the next, say, 10 years?
I think there could be a point where all of this vineyard planting, which is going on at the moment, is going to produce all of a sudden a high quantity of wine, particularly of sparkling wine. And I think there may be a difficulty in selling a lot of that wine when it comes on stream. There could be a lot of it there. One advantage of that sort of problem with sparkling wine is that if it can't be sold, then it can rest on its lees and continue maturing. And of course, that makes an even higher quality wine. So it's a potentially a problem, but I think it's something that the industry will be able to overcome if you consider just how the profile of English sparkling wine has risen in the last couple of years. All of a sudden, a lot of people know that England is a really high quality sparkling wine producer, and that's filtering through. You can see it in people's buying habits. People now are very prepared to spend upwards of £20 a bottle on a bottle of English sparkling wine, and they're realizing that they're getting a lot of bang for your buck, if you like. They're getting a lot of value for that,
especially some of the Night Timber stuff, where you're getting lovely biscuity, bready aromas coming through, which you normally have to pay good money for a vintage champagne to get near.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. What we're going to do now is we're going to crack open a bottle of the 1998 Classic Cuvée and see how that goes.
Very good, okay.
Nice.
Here we go. Okay, so this is the 1998 Classic Cuvée. We generally make two styles of wine each year. Classic Cuvée, which is a blend of the three varieties, usually dominant in Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and the Blanc de Blanc, which is just the pure Chardonnay. We've got 12 hectares, total of 15 hectares here in the Night Timber site. 12 hectares are Chardonnay, and then we've got smaller amounts of the two Pinots. This wine has been very, very successful for us. It's following on the back of the 1999 Classic Cuvée, which was a slightly strange thing that we did, releasing the 99 prior to the 98. It's what a lot of champagne houses did, actually. We find that our vintages very much mirror the vintages that they have in Champagne in terms of the quality each year, and indeed of the styles of the wines that are produced. This wine came from the 1998 vintage, which was a very, very excellent year. Really, really clean fruit that came in from it. Not a huge crop at all. It was quite small. We only made, 8,000 Blanc de Blanc and 16,000 Classic Cuvées, so just 24,000 bottles in total, which is roughly about half our average production. But it's produced some absolutely lovely wines.
What caused that? Was it frosts at the beginning? Or?
It wasn't frost. I think it was just poor flowering, poor fruit set at flowering period. So we got a small amount of fruit, which was laid that down. But later on in the year, especially the last 2 months of the year, it was very, very dry. We'd virtually no botrytis whatsoever, which gives the wine great cleanliness and the potential to age.
Yep.
So this wine, right from the start, we knew that if we could put it down for some extended lees aging, which it's now had 6 years on lees, that we were going to the wine would reach its potential.
Okay.
So immediately on the nose, you've got the richness from the autolysis.
Yeah, it's coming through, isn't it?
It's absolutely beautiful. Good colour. Colour has improved over the years. Of course, with a sparkling wine, the longer that you leave it on lees, the deeper the colour actually gets. Yep. Very, very nice indeed. You've got the honey notes coming through. There's a lemoniness to it, which becomes more distinct on the palate. But I love the nose of the Classic Cuvée, because you've got a lot of complexity coming through from the Pinot Noir and the Pinot Meunier that's in there as well. This is round about 20% Pinot Noir, 20% Pinot Meunier, which gives the wine its base, its structure, if you like.
And the Chardonnay softens it out a wee bit, does it? Or?
Absolutely. The French have an interesting saying at the Champenois. They say that the Pinot Noir is the, if you consider the wine like a picture, the Pinot Noir is the frame and the Chardonnay is the picture.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite an interesting way of seeing it.
Okay, let's try this on the mouth. Very clean, isn't it?
It is
quite
indeed.
Enjoyable.
But yeah, good structure to it. You can feel the acidity right from the start of the palate.
Nice citrusy notes on the finish. That lemon coming through.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's a very, very nice wine. And I think it's rewarded us for having kept it for that period of time, so it can reach its potential.
So you released the 99 because you wanted to keep the 98 in reserve for a bit longer.
It worked out very conveniently, actually, because when we first disgorged the 99, it was, wow, this wine is immediately ready for disgorging. It doesn't require any further time on lees, and it only had 4 years at that point. And then tasting the 98 beside it, it was very much still had a lot of development to go. It was still very tight, very closed. It's just the nature of the vintage. One is a sleeper, and the other one was a more forward vintage. I think this wine, the 98, still will reward more time, especially post-disgorging.
Yeah, so in the bottle, leave it in the bottle.
Yes, if you can give it, you know, this wine keep on going for about another, keep on maturing, keep on improving rather for another 2-3 years after disgorging.
Okay, brilliant. I like it. It's nice. Could easily finish that bottle tonight.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, Dermot, that's fantastic. Just before we wrap up the interview, what sort of wine tip would you have for us, for the people out there?
I think quite an interesting one, and something that a lot of people don't realise. With a vintage sparkling wine, a wine that spent a long time on its lees, don't overchill it. If you overchill it, then you kill a lot of the flavour. You simply can't taste it. You remove a lot of the subtle nuances from the wine if it's too cold. But it is important to have it at not to be too warm, so you can give the acidity comes through.
Yeah,
well,
you get the freshness.
But a good idea, which a lot of people don't consider, is let it breathe for a period of time. This wine that we've just opened here, after 10-15 minutes, you're going to be noticing more things, more features in the wine that have actually been laid down over the long period of aging, where of course there's no oxygen in contact with the wine. Gets two opportunities to gulp in some oxygen. The first is at disgorging, where it takes a big mouthful of oxygen, and then that changes the way that the wine matures for the rest of its maturation. But also then when you open it, the wine is also, even though it's full of carbon dioxide, it wants to suck in oxygen, and when it does that, then it releases all the stuff that's inside.
I suppose they call it opening up. The wine opens up more.
Exactly, yeah, it breathes in the same way that a red wine or some white wines will.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much, Dermot. That's been absolutely brilliant.
Excellent. Thanks very much indeed, Chris.
Cheers. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Dermot. We were going to be talking to Owen Elias from Chapel Down next week. Owen's probably one of the leading winemakers to make still wines in the UK, and we'll be tasting a couple of his wines as well. That ends the UK Wine Show, show number 2, sponsored by 3050. That's 3050thirtyfifty.co.uk. The UK's wine tasting company, whether it be for private or corporate clients, they can see you right. Cheers.